This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
We'll get back to our recurring episodes of mansion makeover, or whatever you would want to call the improvement of an 11-win team and how we get it better. But right now we're going to welcome in Ben Ryder, who is one of the best baseball writers who's out there. He wrote the book Astro Ball, writes for Sports Illustrated, and he joins us now here on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Ben, we're really grateful for you taking the time, your expertise on this franchise. I loved the book Astro Ball. What do you make of some of the accusations that have been made now and the investigation into the sign stealing over these past few weeks?
Well, Danny, I keep thinking back to a quote that Sig Meidel, who was Jeff Luno's longtime kind of data man, his data chief, before leaving for Baltimore a year ago, told me when I was writing the book. He said, the future is a lot weirder than we can imagine. If you think you've got it figured out, just wait. You'll be wrong. Certainly, I never imagined that this is where this story would go. I don't think that most people could have imagined that there are very few hints of it. I do think that I might have some insight into how this might have happened to the Astros and also where the story might go from here.
How did it get to this point?
Well, look, and again, this is just based on the time that I did spend with the organization since 2014. But the central goal of Jeff Luno's front office and of the organization as it was building itself up from the worst baseball team in 50 years, which it was, when Jeff Luno arrived, was to gain an edge, right? He talked about this concept called the bleeding edge, which is kind of you take risks, you push innovation as far and as fast as you can. Sometimes you get cut, sometimes things don't work out, but you keep pushing it. The edge is the thing. That led to a lot of really great developments, obviously, and a lot of wins. It led to all these innovations in player evaluation, in player training, player development, efficiency. But it seems as if, you know, the pursuit of that edge also led at least some members of the organization to engage in behavior that obviously was not as ultimately productive and, in fact, was unethical.
Yeah, that question. And we're talking to Ben Ryder here. I would encourage anybody, I'm fascinated by this, the discussion of the Astros, anybody who boils down what their success has been over the past few years and says, well, it's because they're cheating, that's absolutely wrong, because the Astros did a ton of really innovative things, how they addressed the draft, how they viewed their major league product for several years. Like, they took a lot of real chances. One of the things, and one of the reasons I was excited to have you on, Ben, is that I wonder if when you have that idea of this pursuing the bleeding edge and let's take risks and let's do it differently, and you're seeking basically playing at the margins, how can we do things better than other people do? Does it make you more vulnerable to cutting corners and making ethical compromises? Like, does that attitude sort of can it cross over a line more easily maybe than an organization or a franchise that's doing things more traditionally?
I mean, certainly my theory is that it can, and kind of my understanding of the organization there is that it can. And of course, you know, if you read the report, if you read Jeff Luno's comment, he was not the originator of any of these schemes. The report suggests, you know, maybe he knew about it but didn't pay any attention to it. He was not the driving force behind this. He apparently didn't know about the trash can banging thing at all, according to the report and his own denials. But, you know, then again, that was kind of the culture of the organization that came from the top. I would argue maybe even from above him, because the owner of the team was overseeing all this as well. But that was the culture that was pervasive there. And clearly, at least some of the players, Alex Cora, took up this culture and pushed it in this direction. And it sounds as if AJ Hinch, the manager, had significant qualms about it, but perhaps felt as if he could not stop this momentum bred by the culture. Now, I guess one thing that's important to say is that I don't think this story's over. You know, reading between the lines, like, there are undoubtedly a lot of other teams, especially in 2017, 2018, who are doing similar things besides the Red Sox, right? I mean, there have been all these allusions to it. My colleague Tom Verducci at Sports Illustrated reported that the Astros provided evidence of 8 other teams doing activities like this. There have been whispers about it for years. So you wonder, you know, was this an epidemic in baseball and the Astros are kind of the poster boys for it? Maybe they went the farthest. How much appetite does Major League Baseball have for actually pursuing all these other leads? I would guess not much. I would guess they want to limit the damage. That kind of plays into this, too. That's not at all to excuse what the Astros did, but it's just to suggest maybe, as with, say, the steroids era, this thing was pretty widespread.
Ben, you were with the team, and I was covering this team not too long ago, and I am with you in that this is just a dramatic change in terms of what the past, the history was of this team. What, in your time, since all of this stuff came to light, has changed the most? Your own personal opinion of what you saw firsthand, if anything?
I mean, I'm trying to put everything in context, and I completely understand everybody who is just complete shocked by this. I was shocked by this, and I even understand the reaction, like, oh, well, all that other stuff is garbage now, right? Like, that's the human reaction. It's all so fresh. It's all so shocking. You know, the Astroball story, it all boils down to cheating. Now, that's certainly not true. Like, you try to assign, you know, a percentage advantage to the kind of illicit activities compared with all of the other things they did over the past decade, it would be incredibly low, right? I mean, some statistical analyses suggest that there was really no impact at all in 2017, 2018, that you can determine that the Astros might have gained by doing this. But I certainly understand the anger and the shock and the feelings that this is what is now going to color this era of what seemed like one of the great kind of success stories in not just baseball, but sports history. I understand that too. I think that factually, that's probably not reasonable, but it's certainly a reasonable emotional reaction.
There's also an element to this that's really funny. I realize it's cheating. All the idea of banging on a trash can, and that you could hear it in videos. Like, there was, look, I think that a lot of the reason that Deflategate became such a big deal is people thought it was funny. Like, the idea of deflated footballs and those. And yesterday's with this idea of buzzers, like, it doesn't really change the nature of the cheating if they had buzzer. It's just a different delivery mechanism. Yet, even as, and I don't think that's been proven by any stretch. I don't even know if you could say it's a fair suspicion. It's people running around on the internet trying to figure it out. But that next thing, it's hilarious to watch all of Major League Baseball turn into these internet detectives that are like true crime hobbyists trying to solve a mystery with video that they can find from games over the past couple of years.
It is funny. I mean, there's like, you know, thousands of Zapruder films out there on Twitter now with people kind of like circling pieces of confetti on players' chests and being like, is this a buzzer? You know, that's, I guess, it's part of the fun of this whole thing, if there's a fun element to it. But yeah, I mean, look, that's the other thing. Once you have exhibited this loss of integrity, or once you've experienced, I guess, that is kind of the snowball effect, and that's one reason why it's so important to Rob Manfred, first of all, to come down hard on this, and second of all, to do everything he can to limit the fallout to the Astros and the Red Sox. I mean, I haven't heard anything about Major League Baseball following any other leads as far as these sorts of activities yet, and I don't think that we will in the near future anyway.
I look at this whole thing, and I really do wonder, how much further does this rabbit hole go? And what was your impression seeing all of those things yesterday that came out of speculation about the idea of a buzzer or anything like that? Now, I don't know if there was necessarily any evidence to prove that people are heading in the right direction thinking that the Astros did use something like that. But at the same time, I can understand why there might be a thought that that is used. Is this something that you could see actually being used by baseball teams in a game, a buzzer system to determine whether or not pitches are of a certain way before the pitcher actually delivers them?
It seems as if anything is possible, right? Like that. Like, do I realistically think they could have been doing this? Yes, I do. I mean, I think it's possible. But then you're kind of like, well, who bought the buzzer? Like, does anybody actually know where this product is available? Like, is this, like, did they engineer it themselves? Who's running the buzzer? Is this thing, like, remote control? Is it Bluetooth? I don't know. Like, theoretically, it's possible, and it would probably benefit hitters, but I think we're a long way from connecting all the Twitter rumors to anything factual.
Yeah, I found myself, and we're talking to Ben Ryder of Sports Illustrated, I found myself thinking, like, well, there were also guys doing it, so if they were really using buzzers, I would say that probably a couple times a game, the guy who was triggering it would give him the wrong signal just to mess with him. Like, absolutely tell him, like, hey, here comes a changeup, and then all of a sudden this fastball inside part of the corner. Ben, and this is a next part of the discussion. How does baseball stop this? Because you can tell teams, hey, don't do this. You're not allowed to look at video. The fact is that this sort of stuff has been on. Do we see a difference in how pitches are communicated? Because that's what happened in part in the NFL is that, okay, we'll use headsets. You'll be able to use and communicate directly from the sidelines, and that'll be an easier way. Do you think we start to see something like that in baseball? Do they change the way a catcher gives a pitcher signs?
Yeah, I mean, it seems as if baseball's leaning is to fight technology with technology, whether it's earpieces, whether it's some sort of like light system embedded in the mound. I've kind of come around to the proposal by Joel Sherman, the New York Post columnist, who calls for a return to what he calls Amish baseball, right? Like no electronics at all between first pitch and final out, right? You can use video, whatever, to prepare before the game, study your swing, do whatever you got to do. But once we're in the game, no screens, right? Nothing at all. That kind of takes away the ability to do this sort of thing. And obviously, if it's found that you're using them, then it's like essentially the death penalty as far as MLB's punishment. But yeah, I mean, I like that, right? Like, use all this stuff to prepare. But when the game starts, it's human beings playing against human beings, and that's it.
Yeah, let's take it a step further and, in fact, lock the tunnels to the clubhouses. So once they come onto the field, you can't go anywhere. No more naps in the clubhouses for you guys. No more trips
to the bathroom. You can't go to the bathroom.
That's exactly right. No,
yeah,
we'll give them
a bucket in the corner. That'd be really old school.
Yeah, that might be a fair punishment for the Astros. Hey, Ben, I want to say thanks for coming on. I've really enjoyed your work over the years. I think Astro Ball is a great book.
Awesome.
And I think looking the inside of how a team scouts, develops, and thinks about things is incredible, and just really grateful for you spending the time. And on a personal note, I wish you guys in the union there at Sports Illustrated the best of luck in being recognized. It's a really important publication for, I think, sports in this country in general, and I'm hoping that you guys get the recognition that you absolutely deserve.
Man, I really, really appreciate all of that. Thanks so much, guys, for having me on. You know, Astro Ball, the story clearly got a whole lot more complicated this week, and there's more to come, but I think there's still a lot to be learned, both good and bad, from this subject.
That is Ben Ryder of Sports Illustrated, and you can follow me, Ben Ryder, on Twitter, BenReiter. It is Danny and Gallant. It's funny to see kind of where this will go, and do you think that, I would say this, there's no way that the Astros are the lone wolves in this, Paul. If this was happening at all, I don't know if other teams are going to get targeted the same way, but I absolutely believe that probably one of the chief rationale that they had or justifications for it was that other teams are doing this too. Other teams are doing this, and if we're going to compete at this level, this is what we have to do.
That's all you can do as a defense in that situation. I mean, I understand why they might be pointing at other teams across baseball as far as doing this. And by the way, I do think that they were doing it, but the question is, when did it stop? Did everyone stop when that memo went out? Or
no
did
chance.
Other teams continue doing it? I think that other teams continue doing it.
Oh,
I really
of course
do.
They did.
And I just have, it's a memo. It's not an actual rule. And that goes back to just how weak Rob Manfred is as a commissioner. If you're going
But isn't
to...
it part of it results-based, too? Because only one team won the World Series that year. So part of it, I'm not saying that you shouldn't care about every single team doing it, but clearly they were the most successful at it based on the result.
This is true. But I go back and just having conversations with a guy who pitched in Game 7 of that World Series against the Dodgers. There was so much paranoia on both sides of that game. Just rewatch the beginning. It's crazy how often pitchers were crossing up signals and misfiring and hitting batters and all sorts of things of that nature. The paranoia was ridiculous. It was like 1950s Cold War conspiracy level in Game 7 of that World Series. And I think that other teams are doing it. Look, the Astros, just given their nature, probably found a way to be more nuanced and more thorough with the way that they were crossing the line. And
you shouldn't punish them for cheating better than everybody else.
Listen,
if everybody was cheating, they were just better and they deserve to get that
no,
pitch.
And I'm not saying that, but I do think that there is a very strong possibility that if they were doing something, they were doing it better than everybody else. And that is why they're punished. But listen.
It's almost created as a laudable trait. Look, we don't do anything halfway. And if we're going to cheat, we're going to cheat better than anybody else.
It's their own fault.
Always compete, baby.
We found the market inefficiency in cheating and exploited it, okay?
And by the way, that's not me like advocating what they did or saying what they did was right. But I think some teams just can't get out of their own way. And we heard about it with Ben, and Ben talked about that, just like that principality, as if it's almost a cult where they are trying to their best to get to this certain edge. Well, sometimes you just lose your mind and you turn into Walter White, rationalizing things to yourself when you're offing people. You're killing 12 people in a prison at once. Now, the Astros didn't do that. Yeah.
No, but Paul mentions that. Look, Breaking Bad, I think, is one of the great all-time television shows. And the premise of Breaking Bad is that Walter White is a high school teacher who is this very upstanding moral person who finds out that he's got a fatal diagnosis. He's got a terminal cancer. And he makes a series of rational decisions that lead to him becoming an actual sociopath. And I've heard descriptions of the show saying that the goal of the creator was to make him be able to remain sympathetic, even as he made all of these decisions that, in which he becomes really a monster, a sociopathic, dangerous to everyone. And not to say that the Astros are the same way, but I think you can look at all of the things that they've done, because it isn't just the cheating. They've been involved in the thing with St. Louis, with the guy that broke into their own computer mainframe, and he ended up getting banned from baseball. One of the justifications he used is he felt that Jeffrey Luna, when he had left St. Louis, had taken proprietary information from the Cardinals. You look at
not
what
just
happened,
banned, like in federal prison,
right?
Yeah, he went to jail. You look at what happened with Osuna and them acquiring Osuna. That being controversial, but more than that, then a front office executive actually taunting female reporters who had expressed concern
right.
about it. Like all of these different things where you're like, is it a coincidence that all of that is happening? Because it's possible maybe they're just spotlighted because they won and nobody hates a winner and they get put on a pedestal. The other thing is that something happened in that organization that created either a fault or a flaw or rotted it from the inside where they're capable. It made everyone in that place capable of making decisions or encourage decision making that you look at it and you're like, that's absolutely wrong. It's wrong to cheat. It's wrong to taunt female reporters who were concerned about a very, very serious allegation of domestic violence against a player that franchise acquired.
They 100% sold their soul the day they brought in Roberto Osuna. And I remember that day vividly. That day led to a ginormous debate between all of our show co-hosts. And we were all in agreement, by the way, that Osuna bringing him in, the Astros all of a sudden were unlikable. And we all believed in that moment that had changed. And you go back and you have to wonder, just when you go from where they were in 2014, an absolute laughingstock, and when Luna first came in, to the slow progression where they get all of this talent and they keep getting all of this talent and they're doing things differently and they're driving a lot of people across baseball probably crazy with the way that they're doing it. And they probably thought to themselves, well, I mean, why aren't we continuing to push this? And why aren't we continuing to push the frontier even more until none of these teams even have the remote chance of catching up with us? We are on a totally different planet right now while all of these teams are trying to figure out how to create fire. I think that's what they really thought of themselves. They believed in it so strongly. And the worst part is, I think when you get down that path, you believe you will never be caught. You believe that no one is ever going to find out all of the issues that you have raised along the way to get to this point. And it's indefensible. It really is. And look, I think that there are some things yesterday that I think we got to out of fun, but there's a lot of bodies along the way that the Astros have left because they could not get out of their own way. They could not stop themselves.
You said indefensible, and I think that's an important word. and you justify things to yourself that are indefensible. My view from the outside, and I haven't ever interviewed Jeffrey Luna. I haven't ever talked to or worked in an Astros clubhouse. I've been in there a couple times when they've been visitors to Safeco. But when I look at him, what I think is that their primary evaluation became, is it valuable? Is it valuable? Can it help us win games? And it's not, should we employ Roberto Osuna? It's, does he help us win games? Is acquiring him for what we're giving up, is that in the net best interest of us? It's not, should we cheat? It's, is it valuable to know? Is it valuable to know that? And I think that when you start doing those things, you start making compromises, and it makes it easier to justify to yourself behavior that you otherwise might not.
Yes.
Or it's maybe the psychology of crowds. And like any riot that you see, the reason a riot happens is because one person tests a boundary and they cross a threshold that nobody there individually would do. And there's no response. And it's like, okay. And then all of a sudden a threshold is crossed and everybody starts doing it.
100%. And you know, I'm glad that you brought that specific point up because, you know, Luna is one of the smartest people in baseball. This guy's bilingual. There are so many things that I think he brings to the table that a lot of other people that are in the game, they just don't have. But he was smart, and I'll specifically point to that Osuna thing. He knew that because of Canadian, like, and you can't tell me otherwise. This is, I suppose, speculation on my end. But he knew that Canadian privacy law was such that it would never see the light of day what actually happened between Roberto Osuna and the mother of his child. But what is known is that Roberto Osuna voluntarily took essentially a half-season suspension without appeal and lost half of his salary that season. Something bad happened. Something horrible happened. Luno had no problem with it. And you know why? Because he knew that this was not going to be some situation that would blow up in his face the same way that it did for Ray Rice and the Baltimore Ravens. He knew that nothing was ever going to see the light of day. And while there was a lot of speculation as to what actually happened, especially from people that are in Toronto, that are north of the border, he didn't care. And if he didn't care there, you have to wonder where else he didn't care.
The question stops being, is it right? Should we do this? To what's the downside? And
right.
If the downside, if the negative publicity, which is the huge downside in the acquisition of a player like that, if that becomes, and then you start evaluating, well, how much publicity? Yeah, I can absolutely see how it happens. It's Danny and Gallant. We are going to switch back to the NFL, take a tour around the league as we get set for the NFC, AFC championship games. That's all ahead.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
It is an exceptional day. It's the day before the conference championships. A little bit of a bummer. A lot of excitement over what's going to happen. Jess, what do we got?
We got so much. Let's get right to it. We'll start with one of our local guys that we were keeping tabs on. Was supposed to head to UW, but Kellen Moore remaining in Dallas. And he'll also remain the play caller under Mike McCarthy.
That's weird. I think it's weird, don't you? I mean, they're not ever going to move on from their guys.
Yeah, you know what? You said that. I think it's great because I like Kellen Moore, but it is weird. It's weird that you hire Mike McCarthy and you don't put in Mike McCarthy's offense. That's strange.
How is this any different than what it was before? Because this was a Kellen Moore offense last year, and while there were some very high moments for the Cowboys offense, statistically, I mean, Dak Prescott, what, close to 5,000 yards passing? He had a statistically very good season, but then you watch the games and you're like, what's going on here? Why is Ezekiel Elliott struggling in this game? What's happening? Because they had on paper all the talent to succeed. And it's funny, the first three games of the year, I thought for sure Kellen Moore would end up getting hired somewhere else. I really did, because he was off to an absolutely rollicking start, but then you look at who they played. It's, I think, somewhat taking away the teeth of the new head coach. And
I agree with you.
I wonder how this goes. And I wonder what Mike McCarthy does, to be perfectly honest.
Dak Prescott.
Yeah, we'll talk about Prescott on Monday. He ain't playing this weekend. You know what? Neither are the Jaguars, but we'll talk about them.
Jaguars.
The Jaguars are interviewing former Giants head coach Ben McAdoo
yes!
for their offensive coordinator
Bring
job.
Bring him back!
Is it going to be Evil McAdoo? the extreme makeover that Ben McAdoo underwent when he went from having the doofy feathered bangs to having the slick back hair with the sunglasses when he became Evil McAdoo was one of my favorites.
Oil Tycoon McAdoo?
Yeah.
It kind of was like early Michael Scott and new Michael Scott.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Where they stopped thinning his hair. Except he went in the opposite direction.
Yeah. I don't get what the Jaguars are doing. I don't get why you fire Coughlin and then keep the coach. What are the odds that Doug Marrone is the right coach for your team, given everything that you've seen?
Yeah, probably low because of the quarterback situation. That said,
why don't you just reset everything?
The thing that I have an issue with the Jaguars is that they thought it was a good idea to bring in Nick Foles as their starting quarterback. That was never going to work. And I wonder if Doug Marrone was someone who didn't sign off on that. I really do. I think that Marrone is one of many coaches in this league that could be anywhere from 24 to 12 on any given week if you were to rank them as far as how they fare across the NFL. I thought he did a pretty good job in college when he was at Syracuse. I honestly think he did a pretty good job considering he got the Jaguars to an AFC Championship game with Blake Bortles as their quarterback. Is he the best coach in the world? No. Is he the worst coach in the world? I don't think so. But I am with you in that I don't understand why you would decide to have another general manager that maybe is just dealing with this guy for another year and has to tolerate and deal with all the back and forth that comes with having a guy that you don't see eye to eye with and that you don't just know personally.
Did you trade a draft pick for Yannick Ngakoue? He's going to be a free agent. He wanted a contract extension. He didn't get it. Would you trade a draft pick for the right to sign him?
What kind of a draft pick are we trading? Is a first round pick probably, right?
Second round pick? First or second. One of the two.
It's a tough question because you're picking at the back of the first round. What are the odds in the back of the first round that you find a high impact year one kind of player? Probably low. But the other thing is, too, I'm a little bit hesitant when it comes to bringing in guys outside of market to this team. And maybe that's unfair to feel that because of Ziggy Ansah dealing with all those injuries the last couple of years that way. But that's sort of where I'm at. I'm a little skeptical of outside production from these pass rushers. It doesn't always work out in every single system.
Despite sitting out practice with ankle issues earlier this week, George Kittle, tight end for the 49ers, says he feels fabulous ahead of this weekend.
Do you like Kittle?
I love Kittle.
Kittle annoys me.
He does.
Really annoys me. Yeah.
He annoys me the way Kelsey annoys you, Paul.
Interesting.
Well, I kind of agree with that, Jess.
But I think there's a... Now, for us, we did a deep dive back in Houston of Travis Kelsey and the way that he talks around certain players. And you can look this up for yourself if you so choose. Travis Kelsey to me is a bit of a phony. I don't think he wants any of that contact. I don't think he's... I think George Kittle is legitimately one of the toughest players in the NFL. He seeks out contact. He isn't Travis Kelsey.
It's hate respect, Paul. It's hate respect.
I feel you.
Yeah. It's hard to not like, but you can say annoy, right, Danny?
Yeah, he annoys me. I don't like any of the... I don't like the little dance they show. I don't like Bosa.
Bosa, I get totally.
You'd love them both if they were on your team, though.
Yes, I get it. I get that. And I'm not denying that point, but it doesn't change the fact that it really annoys me. And maybe it is because I do think Kittle is legitimately tough. I do think he's a tough player. And when he refused to go down when the New Orleans guy was yanking on his face mask, like, but man, it's obnoxious. I don't like the pro wrestling style thing if he's not on my team.
I'm with you.
Were you guys annoyed by Rob Gronkowski?
No.
No, not really.
And I hate the Patriots.
Yeah.
I hate them.
Rob was a really lovable... He was a lovable meathead, man. Like, he was just... He was never anything but just a lovable meathead.
Which is funny, because if you ask the probably biggest Patriots fan at the station, Maura Dooley, because she grew up in Boston, she actually didn't like Gronk.
Really?
Yeah.
He's a polarizing figure, isn't
he?
Yeah,
which is incredible. She didn't appreciate his personality, his like frat boy ways. She actually didn't find it charming. She thought there were much more interesting players to be talking about. You should ask her sometime.
Oh, that's really funny.
That is really funny.
The best tight end in NFL history.
Well, not Tony Gonzalez is, but we've talked about that before.
Well, I think as Michael Bumpus described Odell Beckham Jr. as consistently crazy earlier today, I would say that Gronk has been true to himself so much, and for some reason I just have to respect that.
you know what, man? Those guys are really fun to be around. Like, it's no fun to be around someone like Travis Kelce or someone like Odell Beckham, because everybody's had a friend like that that it needs to be the tough guy or needs to be the show. It's really fun to be around a big, lunk-headed bro like Gronkowski. Like, you never go out with that guy and come back in the night and you're like, you know what? That was a terrible time. Because usually, like, three or four ridiculous things happen and he just laughs at him. It's not like he's creating problems or anything. He's just like, oh, dude.
Those were definitely the male friends I surrounded myself with in college.
They're great to be around. Those guys are really fun. They're not liabilities. Because there's the friend that's like, you're like, okay, if somebody's going to start a fight here tonight, it's going to be that guy right there. I don't want to be around him.
Attempting to follow in the footsteps of some of the greats, Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders, Kyler Murray says that he believes he can play professional football and baseball at the same time.
Okay.
No chance.
He's a quarterback.
Wait, can you imagine that? Like, how is this coach going to say, hey, I'm just going to go play baseball for a little while?
Should we actually encourage him to do that? Because doesn't that help the Seahawks out?
Yeah, probably.
Although Brett Hundley did beat the Seahawks last year.
That's true. We've never seen it with a quarterback. I don't know if Bo Jackson could happen again. Like, if Bo Jackson was here right now, would he be able to have the pedigree to dictate? And for Bo, it took turning down the Buccaneers because he was mad at Culver House, who was the owner, who he felt had jeopardized and intentionally sabotaged his baseball eligibility. He goes and plays baseball and then was able to say, okay, I'll play for the Raiders, but only with the understanding that you know I'm going to play baseball. I don't know if that could happen today.
You would have to have someone who is such a transcendent talent that you can put up with it. And that's why the San Francisco 49ers, the Atlanta Falcons put up with it with... he never played for the Giants. But that's why the Atlanta Falcons put up with it with Deion Sanders. Because Deion Sanders was a transcendent talent. He was possibly the fastest player to ever play cornerback in NFL history. And that's what you're going to need. Is Kyler Murray a transcendent talent as a baseball player? Honestly, I don't know. I haven't seen enough out of him to feel that way. I know that the Oakland A's clearly felt that way. But I just can't see it working out. If he was like a wide receiver or a tertiary position where you're not that important, all things considered, like cornerback with Deion Sanders, I could see it happening. I just can't as a quarterback. I can't.
He's old as a baseball prospect. And he's old. What is he, 22, 23? And he hasn't played minor league baseball yet. Like, that's... He's old.
22 years old, yes.
When would he get to the major leagues? He's 25, 26.
Wouldn't it be really funny to have him going, like, during September, where he's, like, traveling from, like, I don't know, like, the Modesto Nuts to, like, an Arizona Cardinals practice? Like, he's flying back and forth in a helicopter between, like, a minor league team and an NFL team.
Yeah, he really should, but you're right. We should encourage him. He really should. He should show what kind
it's
of
gonna work out, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the opportunity. Don't let them dictate what you want.
Yeah.
Don't let them tell you what you're capable of.
This is America.
Yeah. Chart your own path. It's Danny and Gallant. We'll raise flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is time to take measure of everything that's happened over the past 3 hours. The similarities between a 3-hour football game and a 3-hour show. Coincidence? I think not. Started with a coin toss. Maybe we should have that to start the show.
A coin toss.
Each day we start. Would you like
yes.
to start?
Yeah.
Yes.
Tails never fails.
Yeah, and then you get whoever wins the coin toss.
Tails,
gets to
everybody?
Either,
Tails?
I'm going to kick off or I'm going to defer till 7:30.
I like that. Although, what if I accidentally decide to kick off and then I have to kick off also at 7:30?
Yeah, if you say, yeah, how would that work?
We want to kick. I mean, defer.
Yeah, we want to kick. You want to kick. I want to kick.
Speaking of Dak Prescott, look at that. We came back to Dak Prescott.
We did screw that up. That was one of two things, right, where, like, all of a sudden the league spoke in from above between that and the fumble in the end zone.
Yeah.
Weird one.
By the Texans. The fumble should have counted.
Bills. Yes. Yeah, right. The Texans player tossed it. The Bills recovered it. ESPN had thrown to the sideline reporter.
They zoom in on Lisa Salters, whose jaw just drops to the floor.
It's like, oh my gosh. And then you hear Tessitore go, they've awarded him a touchdown.
A touchdown in the game of all games.
Oh, man.
Bills versus Texans. Nothing like this.
A touchdown on a kickoff. Special teams, that's a part of the game.
You can see how he puts a reverse spin on this, and well, there he's symboling for the safety, but that's not a fair catch.
Oh, you do such a good Tessitore, Paul.
Yeah, Paul does do a good Tessitore.
Thank you.
Paul, would you like to throw a flag to start?
Let's go.
Let's go.
Okay, let's go. I'm going to raise a flag for Ben Ryder coming aboard. That was fantastic, and I want to get as much insight as we possibly can on how far this goes, because I think right now there's a lot of speculation, and I would like to actually definitively know what the heck is going on. And that's why I'm really excited for about an hour from now or so, when Trevor Bauer is going to have an Ask Me Anything. And I will be throwing quite the flag at him if he decides to basically get in the fetal position, like it seems like all of baseball is right now, and not say anything. The people that watch this game deserve to know what's happening, if this is a cross, if this is a one-team thing, or if this is a bunch of different things. And baseball has done a very poor job of explaining or laying it all out, especially with the Red Sox, with the Mets. What we've seen the last couple of days, where there have been, quote, mutual parting of ways, end quote, with press conferences that have had no questions answered. We need more than that, baseball.
I don't think you have to worry about that from Trevor Bauer. He might be the one person in baseball who has ignored all like advice to not speak.
I hope so.
He's probably gotten advice several times from their PR department, and I think he's never been one to obey it.
If I had to bet, I would say that he is going to say minimally controversial stuff.
I think so, too.
I think there's going to be a bunch of, I've heard, maybe, it doesn't make sense. I don't think there's going to be one tangible accusation about a specific player that is leveled and has asked me anything.
We can only hope. Trevor Bauer, be our hero.
Come on.
Seriously.
Speak truth to power.
Well, I feel like once one guy starts letting it spill, then more guys will let it spill, because they've been on this alleged gag order. And,
yes.
You know, if they're all for one and one for all, one guy is going down for speaking on it, then let's go, everybody.
Although would you rat?
I don't know.
Would
how
you
many
rat? Yeah. I don't know if I would rat. It's such a tough one. Because there's part of me that feels like you should speak up and say what you think in these situations, because it's the right thing to do. And there's another one like, I don't know. I just might do the, it's none of my business. I'm just going to mind my own business. So I feel weird calling for, like, give me the tea. Is that how you would say
snitch!
Is that how the kids would talk about it?
Give me the tea. I've never heard
the
that.
Tea? Like sipping tea gossip? No.
You can make that a thing if you want. You can make fetch happen,
I'm not
too.
To make any, I'm not trying to make anything a thing. I'm just old.
Danny's ahead of us.
I'm going to raise. Can I raise and throw a flag simultaneously?
Yes.
Okay. I'm
Please
going
throw
to
a
do
flag.
That. Because I'm throwing
they
a flag
off brand.
On the scandal itself and the fact that it's gotten to this point, but raise a flag because I think it's one of the most fascinating conversations that we've had in a long time. And as someone who's been a lifelong baseball fan and wanted more people to talk about baseball, I've gotten my wish so far in 2020. That's
the monkey's
for sure.
Paw.
Exactly. And I think it touched on so much more than just the game. It touches on like subjects that go beyond that: cheating, journalism, how we report things. Allegiance to one's team, what's a snitch, what's an advocate. It's just so many different conversations, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
It's a good one. I'm fascinated by it, and I'm interested, and I don't see it as a, oh my gosh, I'm outraged and can't believe it's happened. But I also am, I want to know, did they have buzzers on it? Who was pushing on the buzzer? How long would you hold it on? Was it an electroshock? Why was it on the, if it was on your chest, why did you put it there? Is it because that's where, they apply the little heart monitors when you get an operation? I don't know. I have a lot of questions. Jess, flags?
Oh, I'm raising a big old crimson flag. I'm raising old crimson himself or herself. I don't know if that's a gendered flag. But anyway, I'm raising old crimson for the Cougars week as a whole.
Yeah.
We've got Steve Gleason getting
our
the congressional
Cougs.
Our Cougs, Paul. Congressional gold medal. Then you have Morgan Weaver going number 2 overall in the Women's Soccer League draft. And then yesterday we heard Coach Rolovich gave a very impassioned introductory press conference. And then last night, the Cougs upset number 8 Oregon. Beasley Coliseum's going to be bumping this weekend. It's Klay Thompson and Steph Curry are coming to town to retire Klay's jersey. It's going to be so fun. I'm really excited for everyone in Pullman because I do believe Beasley Coliseum will have a sellout crowd. And that's something we haven't seen in a while. And it was the first time they upset a top 10 team in 13 years. So just give it up for the Cougs this weekend. It's a good week to be a Coug.
Yeah, that's right, Danny. Give it up. Give it up.
I'm excited. I like Rolovich.
Of course he is.
He sounded very fun.
You don't sound excited.
I
put some excitement
you
in your
you're
voice.
Not playing the Huskies.
Well, especially against Oregon.
Yeah, absolutely I do. It's great. Take down the Ducks. My flag is going to be raised just toward all of baseball. The absolute, I love it when everybody sort of just drops the gloves and it's like, okay, there's no more supervision here. Like, you've got the son of former bench coaches making allegations about drug use. You've got burner accounts. It's like all of a sudden they're like, we'll believe anything. And everything devolves into just tabloid shouting, oh my God, there's allegations about so-and-so doing such-and-such. And did you know he wouldn't let them rip his jersey off because he had a buzzer and he didn't want to be defrocked in front of everyone? I love it when there's anarchy.
Jeff Passan just wrote an article for ESPN.com, just came out, called The Day Baseball Lost Its Mind.
It's great.
That's very appropriate.
I would like it to be the year that baseball lost its mind. If you go back to 2000, you know, right around that time when you had drama with steroid allegations, you had players changing teams and all of those days. Like 2000 to 2005, I thought was baseball's heyday. I thought it was a fun, fascinating time. I want to get back to it. And you know what? Stuff like this does get back to it. When you have a long, monotonous 162-game season, you need other stuff to flavor up the journey. And this is a great start to the year.
I would say this. If I was advising the Astros, if I was their PR department, what I would tell them is lean in to being the villains. Absolutely lean in. Have Bregman change his Twitter handle to Mr. Steal Your Sign. Have them step out of the batter's box and make weird, invented, elaborate signals to each other. Start calling out pitches as the pitcher's in his windup. Just shout out, fastball, splitter. Like all of those, absolutely lean into it and become the villain.
Alternate uniforms with trash can logos.
Yeah. Or just like, we're only going to wear black hats. That's all we're going to. We will only wear all black hats. That's all we're going to do this year.
It should have a McKringleberry sign. Just for fun.
Oh, it'd be fantastic. Well, it's been a very, very fun week. We'll talk to you on Monday. We will be working Monday as we recap the conference championship games and get set for the Super Bowl. Lydia Cruz, Jessamyn McIntyre, keep everything afloat. Ben Ryder was an absolutely fantastic guest. And, well, he's Paul Gallant, and he's going to be holding it down and joining us at 7 a.m., Danny and Gallant, on Monday.
Give me that buzzer, baby.
It was just so much fun.